Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling something a listener requested. We're going to take a look at how administrative systems, how they come to be.
It's a lot more interesting than it sounds.
Yeah, way more interesting than it might sound at first.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
To really understand how it all works, we're going to use a specific example to illustrate. The creation of the CVR Act in Denmark. So the CVR Act, if you're not familiar, is basically, it's a central business register.
A one-stop shop for all sorts of business info.
Exactly, like a giant database.
Yeah, think of it as like a giant database that holds everything from a company's address and ownership to its financial records.
Exactly, and what's fascinating is that this seemingly simple idea, I mean, it went through a lot of back and forth, a lot of revisions before it became the system it is today. And to help guide us through this, well, we have our expert here.
Happy to be here.
Who's going to help us analyze this whole creation process through two main lenses, communication and structural properties.
We'll see how those two things kind of work together to shape something like the CVR Act.
Okay, so before we get into the CVR Act itself, let's kind of like set the stage, you know. What exactly are we talking about when we say institutionalization in the context of administrative systems?
Well, imagine you have, you know, a great idea for a new system, but it's just an idea. It's kind of floating around up here. Institutionalization is basically that process of, it's the process of that idea becoming a concrete reality, rules, norms, structures, all within an organization or a society. It's how something abstract becomes something really solid, you know, something real.
So in the case of the CVR Act, we're talking about how this idea of, you know, central business register went from a concept to an actual functioning system.
Precisely. But here's the catch. It's not a smooth or straightforward process.
Right.
You know, there are always competing interests, different interpretations of, you know, what the system should be, and even power struggles along the way.
Oh, yeah. It's like a recipe with a bunch of cooks in the kitchen, you know.
I like that analogy.
They're all adding their own spices and fighting over the best way to make it.
Yeah, and understanding those dynamics, that's really key to understanding how these administrative systems really come to be.
Okay, so let's start by looking at the communication aspect, you know, the communication piece. You mentioned that communication isn't just about sharing information, right?
Right.
It plays a much bigger role in shaping these systems.
Absolutely. The way we communicate about an idea, you know, how we frame the problem and the solutions, all of that can significantly impact how it's eventually institutionalized.
Okay, so this is where the concept of definitional power comes in.
Right. Think of it this way. Whoever gets to define the terms of the debate, whoever gets to frame the problem and the solutions, well, they hold a lot of power. Because by defining the problem a certain way, you're already kind of pushing the solution in a particular direction.
So in the case of the CDR Act, were there specific groups or actors who tried to, like, control that narrative?
Mm.
Control, you know, the way the problem and solution were defined in a way that that benefited them.
Oh, absolutely. The source material really dives into this. You had different government agencies, business groups, you know, even privacy advocates. They were all vying for control over, you know, how the CVR Act was understood, how it was implemented.
It's like a political battle.
Yeah.
But instead of like fighting over territory, they're fighting over the meaning and the purpose of the CVR Act itself.
Exactly. And the way they communicated their ideas, the arguments that they used, all of it played a huge role in shaping the final outcome.
Yeah. I'm starting to see how this is way more complex than just, you know, someone say, hey, let's create a business register.
Right.
And this is where that Sotheby's Kahn model comes in handy, the social construction of technology.
Right. It helps us analyze how these different social groups with their own interests and agendas all come together to shape a piece of technology like the CVR Act.
And in the source material, they actually identified five distinct models or frameworks for how people interpreted the CVR Act.
Yes. And each model represented, it represented a different vision for, you know, what the system should be and how it should function. You had groups pushing for a really, you know, fully integrated, super efficient system, while others were more concerned with data privacy and security. And then there were those who emphasized user-friendliness for businesses.
Wow. So it wasn't just a technical project. It was a social and political battleground.
Yeah.
With each group trying to steer the CVR Act in a direction that aligned with their own vision.
That's a great way to put it. And to really understand why some interpretations won out over others, well, we need to go beyond just the communication aspect and look at the structural factors at play.
Okay, so let's talk about those structures.
Yeah,
we're
yeah.
talking about things that already exist within the administration, like technical infrastructure, departmental responsibilities, even who controls the budget.
Exactly. These pre-existing structures and resources, they can be incredibly powerful in shaping how a new system, like the CVR Act, is implemented.
It's like you're building a house.
Yeah.
But you're not starting with a blank slate.
Yeah.
You know, you have to work with the existing foundation, the plumbing, the electrical wiring, all those things, they kind of constrain what you can build and how you can build it.
That's a great analogy. And just like those physical constraints, these structural elements within the administration, they can limit or enable certain possibilities for the CVR Act.
So how do these structures actually, how do they translate into power? How do they give certain groups an advantage in shaping the CVR Act?
Well, think of it this way. Imagine one group has control over the technical infrastructure, you know, the existing databases and networks. That gives them a huge amount of influence over how the CVR Act is designed and integrated.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones who know how the pipes work, so to speak.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you have things like departmental responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, which government agency is ultimately in charge of the CVR Act? Mm. Whoever has that authority, well, they can set the agenda, allocate resources, influence the overall direction of the system.
It's starting to make sense how these, like, seemingly mundane details,
right.
You know, like who controls the tech, who's in charge, can actually have a huge impact on the final product.
And then, of course, there's the all-important question of money.
Yeah.
Who controls the budget for the CVR Act? Because without funding, even the best ideas are just ideas.
So it's not enough to just, you know, have a great idea for the CVR Act. You need the resources, technical know-how, and the authority to make it happen.
Precisely. And understanding those dynamics is crucial to understanding why certain interpretations of the CVR Act gained traction while others fell by the wayside.
It's like a game of chess, you know?
Right.
Each player is trying to leverage these structural elements to their advantage.
Exactly. And we haven't even touched on the fascinating world of legitimization yet.
Oh, that's right. We need to understand how these decisions were justified and made to seem like the right choice, even if there were other options on the table.
Yeah, and that's where things get really interesting. But we'll save that for part two of our deep dive.
Stay tuned, folks, because we're about to unravel the secrets of how power and persuasion shaped the CVR Act into the system it is today.
It's going to be an eye-opener.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to the deep dive. Before the break, we were talking about how those structures within the administration, you know, like who controls the tech, who controls the budget, how all that can give certain groups an advantage when shaping new systems, like the CVR Act.
And it's not just theoretical, these advantages. I mean, they play out in very real ways during the whole decision-making process.
Okay, so let's get specific.
Yeah.
How did each of these resource categories, like how did they actually influence the CVR Act's development?
Okay, well, let's start with what we called technical organization. You'll remember this is all about, it's about access to and control over the actual design of the information system. You know, the source material highlights how the pre-existing systems, the infrastructure that was already in place, it really influenced the design choices, the choices that they made for the CVR Act.
So they weren't just building from scratch.
No, they had to consider, you know, what was already in place.
Mm.
They had to think about how the CVR Act would work with those existing databases and networks. And in some cases, you know, certain technical limitations or capabilities, they actually dictated what was even possible to create.
I see. That could create some tension, right? Like what if one group wanted to build this super sleek, integrated system?
Right.
But the existing infrastructure was like super clunky or outdated.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
And those groups with more technical expertise, well, they could leverage that knowledge to kind of push their preferred interpretation of what the CVR Act should look like.
It's almost like they were speaking a different language.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you're fluent in tech, well, you have more power in shaping the conversation.
Yeah, a perfect analogy. Now let's shift gears to information responsibility. This is about who gets to collect the data, who maintains it,
right?
Who controls the data stored in the CVR system? It's a big one.
Yeah, and whoever controls the information, Well, they control the whole system.
Right, exactly. The source material, it actually reveals that, various government departments had different ideas about who should be responsible for that CVR data.
Okay.
Some were advocating for, like, a really centralized approach, while others wanted to keep control within their own department.
Oh, yeah. I bet that sparked some interesting power struggles.
You bet. And those pre-existing legal frameworks, you know, the ones surrounding data ownership and responsibility, well, they played a massive role in shaping the final outcome.
So past decisions about, you know, information control, they had like a direct impact on how the CVR Act was implemented.
You could say that. Now, on to departmental responsibility. This one's pretty straightforward. It's about, you know, which government department is ultimately in charge of the CVR Act.
Oh, I bet there were a few departments.
Mm-hmm.
I bet there were a few departments eager to take ownership of this thing. It's a pretty big deal, right?
You're not wrong. And the source material, it explains how these departmental responsibilities, well, they were often intertwined with access to, you know, crucial resources like funding, personnel, all that.
So it's not just about having the authority.
Right.
You know, you got to have the means to execute your vision.
Absolutely. And those departments with a proven track record, you know, the ones who had experience managing similar systems, well, they likely had an advantage in the negotiations.
Like applying for a job. You got to have the experience to back up your claims.
And finally, we get to economic organization.
Uh-huh.
Which covers all things financial. So who pays for the development? Who controls the budget? Can the system itself generate revenue? You know, all those questions.
And this is where things get really interesting, right?
Yeah.
I can see how, how the potential for profit could really influence the CVR Act.
Oh, absolutely. The source material even suggests that, the possibility of actually selling access to that CVR data, well, that was a major factor in the decision-making process.
I can see why. I mean, that could be a pretty lucrative source of income, you know,
yeah,
for the government.
Right.
But it also brings up, you know, those ethical questions about data privacy and who really benefits from the system.
You've hit on a crucial point. These were definitely hot-button issues during the CVR Act's development. But in the end, you know, that desire to generate revenue, well, it did have a significant impact on the final form of the system.
It's a classic example of how those economic factors can really shape administrative systems.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes the bottom line wins out.
It's rarely a simple equation, though, to really get it, to fully grasp how these resource dynamics play out. You have to remember, it's not just about who has the most resources, you know? Mm-hmm. It's also about how they use them.
So like a smaller group, a less well-funded group, they could still exert some influence if they're smart about, about leveraging what they have.
Exactly. It's about building alliances, crafting compelling arguments, and, using those resources strategically to champion their particular vision for the system.
It's like a high stakes game of chess.
Uh-huh.
But with real world consequences.
Right.
For how the system is implemented and who benefits.
It's a very apt comparison. And to fully grasp the implications of all these power dynamics, well, we need to examine that final piece of the puzzle, legitimization.
Right, because it's not just about wielding power.
Yeah.
Right, it's also about making your actions seem, you know, legitimate and even necessary.
Precisely. In the next part, we'll unpack the specific legitimization strategies, the ones they employed during the CVR Act's creation, and really explore how they shaped the system, you know, the one we see today.
It's about understanding the story behind the story, right?
Yes.
The motivations, the justifications that shaped the CVR Act. Stick with us, folks. It's about to get really insightful.
Welcome back, Deep Divers. We are in the home stretch now of our exploration into the CVR Act's creation. And trust me, this is where things get really fascinating.
You're right. We've seen how competing interpretations, all those resource dynamics we talked about, how they really shaped the CVR Act. But now we're kind of zooming in on legitimization, how all those involved, you know, how they justified those decisions.
Yeah.
And presented them as, well, not just acceptable, but downright necessary.
So it's kind of like putting a good spin on things, framing those decisions so they're a little more palatable.
It's more than just spin. It's about aligning decisions with broader societal values. You know, those things we all kind of hold dear, so they resonate with deeply held norms,
yeah,
beliefs, all of that.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What kind of legitimization strategies did they use, the folks involved in shaping the CVR Act? Give us the inside scoop. Well, one common tactic was emphasizing efficiency. You know, they argued that a centralized business register like the CVR Act would streamline processes, cut down on bureaucracy, and ultimately, you know, save everybody time and money.
The classic, we're doing this for your own good.
Right.
We hear that one a lot.
It's very effective, especially when you're dealing with, you know, complex systems that people might find intimidating. People generally like things to be simple, yeah. Efficient.
Makes sense. What other strategies did they use?
Transparency. That was another big one. Those pushing for, you know, greater access to business information, well, they argued that the CVR would promote openness, accountability. You know, make it harder for companies to hide any shady dealings.
I can see how that would appeal to, you know, to the public's sense of fairness.
Right.
Everybody wants a level playing field.
Right.
Especially when it comes to businesses.
Exactly. And some groups even went so far as to link the CVR Act to national security.
Oh, wow.
You know, arguing that having this central database of business information, well, that could help prevent fraud, money laundering, even terrorism.
Wow, playing the national security card. That's a powerful way to legitimize pretty much anything.
It can be, but it's also important to, you know, consider the downsides of those arguments. I mean, linking a system like the CVR Act to national security, well, that could lead to more surveillance and potentially even misuse of data.
So while legitimization can be used for, you know, for positive outcomes, it can also be used to justify actions that might not be in everybody's best interest.
That's a crucial point. It's essential to kind of look beyond the surface, consider who really benefits from these narratives.
So what does all this mean for us?
Yeah.
You know, how do we, as informed citizens, how do we navigate this complex world of administrative systems, all those power dynamics at play?
By understanding the processes. Recognizing that these systems, they aren't neutral. They're shaped by, you know, by competing interpretations, resource dynamics, and yes, those legitimization strategies we've been talking about.
So it's not enough to just take things at face value. We need to dig a little deeper.
Right.
Understand the motivations, the power struggles that are happening behind the scenes.
Exactly. Ask questions, consider different perspectives, and be wary of, you know, narratives that seem overly simplistic or benefit a select few.
It's about being, you know, an informed and engaged citizen, not just passively accepting whatever system is handed to us.
Absolutely. And with that, I think we've reached the end of our deep dive into the CVR Act.
What I think is so cool about this deep dive is that it's not just about, you know, one business register in Denmark. This is about understanding how those administrative systems, the ones that impact our lives every day, how they're shaped. You know, all around us, everything from healthcare to education, social welfare, you name it.
Hopefully this deep dive has given you the knowledge and the critical thinking skills, you know, to really analyze these systems and make informed decisions about the world you want to live in.
So keep questioning, keep exploring, and keep diving deep. Until next time, fellow explorers.